Shelley was the product of a liberal family. Her father, William Godwin, was a radical social theorist, and her mother, Mary Wollstonecraft, wrote the pioneering feminist work A Vindication of the Rights of Woman. Her mother died soon after her birth. When she was 16 years old, in 1814, Mary Godwin met and fell in love with Percy Bysshe Shelley, the notorious poet. Shelley was already married, and when they revealed their affair to Godwin, the angry father usurped the liberal theorist. He forbade their relationship. Mary eloped with him to the continent, but in 6 months they returned penniless, with Mary pregnant. The baby died, the young couple were estranged from their families, and English society abjured them. In 1816 they left for Switzerland with Mary's stepsister, Claire Claremont, Byron's mistress, to stay with the eccentric poet Lord. They arrived in May in Geneva, where Mary wrote Frankenstein. Frankenstein was originally published in 1816. 15 years later, Mary Shelley wrote a new introduction to her novel. Her publishers, she wrote, expressed a wish that I should furnish them with some account of the origin of the story. I am the more willing to comply, because I shall thus give a general answer to the question so very frequently asked me, how I, then a young girl, came to think of and to dilate upon so very hideous an idea. It is true that I am very averse to bringing myself forward in print, but as my account will only appear as an appendage to a former production, and as it will be confined to such topics as have connection with my authorship alone, I can scarcely accuse myself of a personal intrusion. It is not singular that as a daughter of two persons of distinguished literary celebrity, I should very early in life have thought of writing. As a child I scribbled, and my favourite pastime during the hours given me for recreation was to write stories. Still, I had a dearer pleasure than this, which was the formation of castles in the air, the indulging in waking dreams, the following up trains of thought which had for their subject the formation of a succession of imaginary incidents. My dreams were at once more fantastic and agreeable than my writings. In the latter, I was a close imitator, rather doing as others had done than putting down the suggestions of my own mind. What I wrote was intended at least for one other eye, my childhood's companion and friend. But my dreams were all my own. I accounted for them to nobody. They were my refuge when annoyed, my dearest pleasure when free. I lived principally in the country as a girl, and passed a considerable time in Scotland. I made occasional visits to the more picturesque parts, but my habitual residence was on the blank and dreary northern shores of the Tay, near Dundee. Blank and dreary on retrospection, I call them. They were not so to me then. They were the eyrie of freedom, and the pleasant region where, unheeded, I could commune with the creatures of my fancy. I wrote then, but in a most commonplace style. It was beneath the trees of the grounds belonging to our house, or on the bleak sides of the woodless mountains near, that my true compositions, the airy flights of my imagination, were born and fostered. I did not make myself the heroine of my tales. Life appeared to me too commonplace an affair as regarded myself. I could not figure to myself that romantic woes or wonderful events would ever be my lot. But I was not confined to my own identity, and I could people the hours with creations far more interesting to me at that age than my own sensations. After this, my life became busier, and reality stood in place of fiction. My husband, however, was from the first very anxious that I should prove myself worthy of my parentage, and enroll myself on the page of fame. He was for ever inciting me to obtain literary reputation, which even on my own part I cared for then, though since I have become infinitely indifferent to it. At this time he desired that I should write, not so much with the idea that I could produce anything worthy of notice, but that he might himself judge